Prelude. Johnson, the executioner, moves forward, swinging his axe. He slices the sun in half. It falls into the hands of gravity. Chapter 1. The structure of he. Wordless sits near the window, stirring his coffee. The voice of Stocky Man comes out of the radio that sits on the kitchen table. Stocky Man's voice is calm and relaxed. He speaks in a slow cadence.
A human landscape that is distant from any reality in the universe. A place called Earth. I will refer to Earth in this discussion as he. Since this world, known as the planet Earth, is for the most part ruled, dominated, and being destroyed by he. He is not just anyone. He is someone you may know intimately. He might be white, black, or yellow. He might be red, brown, purple, or green. He might be your next-door neighbor. He might even be you. He is easy to spot because his mask is invisible. He has no value system. He is selfish with myopic vision. He is obsessed with power, with controlling others, with making money at any cost. Apparently, his goal is to destroy everything that lives. He wants all the gold, all the oil, all the diamonds. He will steal, cheat, and kill to get them. He is a master of illusion. He can make an entire race of people disappear. He can make entire countries disappear at the drop of a hat. He constantly changes history to fit his needs. He will look you straight in the face and lie. He will lie out of the center, left and right corners of his mouth. He will lie in his sleep, lie while he brushes his teeth. He will even lie on his deathbed. He will lie through books, newspapers, radio, TV, through movies, dance, and paintings. His world is filled with puppets, and he is the puppeteer. The only string that he attaches to his puppets is freedom, a freedom disconnected to the universe and the Creator. A freedom that binds us to worldly cycles. A freedom that lacks truth. A freedom that allows us to be locked into an insatiable addiction to power. A power that disregards our own sense of humanity and our own sense of right and wrong. How do we come back? We cannot go back. We have gone too far in the wrong direction. Where is salvation? There must be a way out. Would you believe it if I told you salvation is in sound, and also the sound between sounds? Would you believe it if I told you salvation is in the unplayed sound? What we might call silence. Sound leads us to tone, and tone takes us to the tone world. It is inside the tone world we find the key to survival. Thank you. Why do people who could once see in color now only see in black and white? We were not born that way. Time is running out. The landlords of this planet will soon be evicted. We must get up from under their boots and find a way out. Life is priceless. We cannot put a price on life. We have been told that life has no meaning. We have been told not to believe in spirits, not to have a vision. In fact, it is against the law to speak of such things. One day I was in a public park and I watched as the fire patrols made a huge bonfire. Then they tossed boxes and boxes of books, recordings, and paintings into this blazing red inferno. The flames were quite sad. So sad, they cried themselves out. I reached to the ground and picked up this recording that had somehow been saved. I was curious to see why these people had gone to such lengths to destroy this music. The record was called Music of the Shadow World. The sounds I heard were incredible. I felt that everyone in the world should hear such music. Why was this music banned? Why didn't they want us to feel? From that day on, my life was changed. One night through a dream, I was instructed to enter the spruce forest that surrounded the upper Blue Valley. It was there that I was visited by the gatekeeper of the Tone World. Out of nowhere, I went deaf. First in my left ear, then in my right. I was immediately able to hear in a different way. I had stepped into another plane of existence. Sound in this universe was touchable. It possessed a salty taste, much like the sea. This sound would blush and take the form of an eagle, then turn into a peeling waterfall, then back into an eagle. I saw the most amazing and frightening thing. I saw a two-headed serpent with seven tongues. Three tongues were coming out of one head, and four tongues were coming out of the other. Each tongue was dancing its own dance. After several days, the tongues transformed into tones. The first tone was called light. This tone enabled the blind to see. These light tones could be split into infinite colors called harmonics. Each harmonic could do fantastic things. The second tones were called water tones. These tones could revive the thirsty and curious by showing them the mystery intervals that could lead one to the magic melodic rainbows that span the sky after rainfall. The third series of tones were the balmic tones. These tones healed all ailments, including cancer, headache, stomach aches, colds, and flus. Balmic tones can be broken down into many combinations of sounds and rhythms. The fourth series of tones were the air tones. Air tones empowered people to fly, to soar above all of life's obstacles through use of imagination, kindness, and dreams. The fifth series of tones were called earth tones. Earth tones made green plants grow without sunlight or water. The sixth series were the Tones of Fire. These tones burned away all that was not eternal in sound. All that was superficial in life was dismissed by the Fire Tone series. The seventh tongue turned into the seventh tone. That were the bell tones. These tones unlocked our souls to enter the myriad underworlds of existence. Desert world, mountain world, ocean, forest, and sky worlds. As I listened and experienced more and more sound, many things were made visible to me about life. The earth was not in tune with the reality of the universe. The way that he has things set up works against every good impulse received by men, women, and children. It is about believing deeply in the unbelievable, simply because the believable has failed us terribly.
Wordless, at this point, turns the radio off and places his cup in the sink. He begins to speak.
My name is Johnson Wordless. I am a member of his army. For the last 8 months, I have been assigned to the Roundup Squad, Unit 714. It is our job to capture and transport children to the reindoctrination camps. Since the plague began 10 years ago, many children have run away to join the Shadow People and seek passage to the Tone World. We feel these children have lost their sense of loyalty and must be redirected back into the system. Article 140A of the Army Handbook says, and I quote, "All armed forces personnel are not allowed to have any literature that in any way entertains the notion of the Tone World. There is no Tone World. There are no Shadow People who manipulate sound to do magical things. There is no myth structure, only the oath of he. Any soldier acknowledging such myths as real or in jest while on duty or off will be prosecuted. It is against the law to speak of such things. Since joining the army, I have been disturbed by recurring nightmares. These dreams are dominated by the image of the sun being sliced in half like a lemon. I see the crying faces of children in the middle of burning gases. There is no dirtier work than being a soldier. It is particularly painful for me because I hate what I do, yet I do it. Originally, I thought we would just round up children and bring them back to their parents. This idea evolved into bringing them to reindoctrination camps. These camps were to redirect energy, but they're just brainwashing centers. There's electric shock treatment. There's a drug that puts them in a catatonic state, taking away all spirit and their will to think. There's another drug that makes them all act alike, and still other drugs that make them deaf, dumb, and blind. All of this has evolved even further into the forming of hit squads that now actually execute children who seem especially gifted. I know they will kill me if I don't do my job. How I wish I didn't feel the pain connected with conscience. Yet I thank God that I can still feel. How I wish I could be strong enough to escape, strong enough to fight back, strong enough to die for what is right. Every day I look for a sign, a ray of light. When I was a child, I remember reading science fiction books about a future time when books would be burned and curiosity could literally kill you. I never dreamed these things would come true in my lifetime, or that I would be an active participant. I am happy just to remember the image of feeling. I open letters sent by school children. Often I wonder how they can still smile when there are hardly any green plants left. One day I was on patrol. The skyline is yellow. The child sits in the snow collecting roses. I thought I was trapped in the deep south around 1921. Of course, I would later realize this was not so. Raspy Voice was hired by the Army to be a sound scout. He was an ex-singer. His job was to measure sound vibrations. Any sounds vibrating at an ultra-high rate had to be investigated. It was against the law to play non-commercial music. Raspy Voice had been imprisoned at one point in his life for playing cosmic music. His vocal cords were damaged during a torture session, leaving him with a distinct growl in his speech. He eventually agreed to give information about the shadow people in exchange for his life. When I look at his eyes, I see signs of a broken heart. He was constantly in a bad mood. And on top of all this, he would chain-smoke cigarette after cigarette from the time he awoke until he went to bed. Still, it was Raspy Voice who had come closest to the tone world. He did not take any of it for granted. The fact that roses grew out of piles of snow meant that we were near a sonic passage. I wandered downward toward the lower rim of the Orange Valley. We descended upon a village. I started to become ill. My stomach had a bad reaction to army food. I waited for sunrise. Raspy Voice sat on the hood of his jeep. The wind approached him. He runs down the street flapping his arms like a bird. The sky is green with purple clouds. We reach the village. The eyes move slowly up and down the street. There is a bakery, a church, and a shoe store. I knock on the door of the church. There's no answer. I wait and knock again. There's no answer. I'm left alone on the corner. Across the street, I look through the window of a funeral parlor and see myself in a coffin. A man wearing dark glasses waves his arm, signaling me to come inside. I walk into the parlor. The man introduces himself. "My name is Sadness," he said. "I own 3/4 of the world. Let me tell you a story." There was a man sitting by a lake, watching other men fish. He watched from morning till late afternoon. One day their bodies turned into a train. They whistled a very ancient tune. The man could not pick up the tune. He drowned, trying to sing the same tune as they. I take a second look in the coffin and realize it is not me inside. I run onto the street. A bell begins to sound. I see a large dog eating some meat at the end of the block. Blood drips from the dog's mouth. There is a light in the window of the grocery store. I open the door and see baskets of food on the counter. The sky is outlined in bright blue. I begin to eat and eat until I'm full. I smell laughter and hear the heavy walk of Raspy Voice. I return to my unit.
Wordless, sitting on the side of his bed, looks out of his window. 3 winged birds perch on willow trees. Chapter 2. Sky Poet.
My name is Sarah Graybeard. I was born near the desert country in the low mountains. I come from a family of sky poets. That is, we interpret cloud patterns. We strongly believe the sky is a living communicator to the people. All nature is teaching us how to live. This skill was passed down through my parents. Many people believe sky poetry is a useless, esoteric indulgence. Sky poets believe clouds are God's paint, and the sky is the canvas. I was often left in grassy fields to look up at the sky. Each cloud makes a picture poem. My father would ask me, "What do you see? Did you catch the stories?" The story was always the same. It had to do with something beautiful. It was the song the grass sung. It was about feeling, about horizons and hope. Our motto in life was beauty inspires something beautiful. My father's name was Lester Graybeard. My mother's maiden name was Clark. Mother was a clothmaker. She would hand weave and dye cotton, make shirts, dresses, and tablecloths, which she would sell in the markets. She would tell me spontaneous stories that always had some kind of moral. And I will never forget the gentle voice of my mother telling me such stories, like the story of Little Bird.
Once there was a bird that was born without any wings. All the other birds would fly from tree to tree. Little Bird could only hop on the ground, never getting close to a tree limb without the help of his mother, who loved Little Bird unceasingly. Little Bird would ask his mother, "How do I fly? All the other birds have wings. I have no wings." His mother would bring him food and say, "I see no birds flying from the inside. Anyone can fly in the air, but I see no birds flying from the inside." Little Bird listened to his mother's words, but he didn't understand. All the birds put on party hats and laughed at Little Bird. As Little Bird grew older, he would think about his mother's words, "Fly from the inside out." One morning, the birds were singing. Little Bird had been practicing his singing and decided to join in. Out of nowhere, from the bottom of the tree, Little Bird began to sing. And something so very beautiful began to happen. Little Bird's tone was brighter, his phrasing clearer and stronger than all the other birds. The song elevated and rose up to the clouds with Little Bird's voice in the lead. Little Bird began to fly on the inside. The singing went well into the afternoon. Afterwards, all the birds laughed together, and Little Bird understood his mother's words.
Sarah Graybeard lived in one of the cylinder-shaped houses near the central square. These buildings were constructed from red brick. They resemble huge chimney stacks. Her apartment was circular, with sunlight pouring through three triangular windows. Outside, the central square is crowded with all kinds of people. There are businessmen in plaid suits mingling with politicians. There are salesmen and vendors selling their various wares, from bicycles, banners, and clothing, to food, candies, and jewelry. Representatives from the When You're Gonna Croak funeral home give away cards. Border refugees hold up signs that say, "Let us go home." Victims of the plague beg for money. There are freshly planted lemon trees in front of each house. In a few minutes, Stocky Man is scheduled to give a public speech. Sarah Graybeard closes the front door of her apartment and begins to walk through the square. The speaking stage stands underneath a huge oak tree. A microphone with two large speakers has been set up. Raspy voice enters from the opposite end with a unit of soldiers, including Wordless. Down the middle of the square, walking cautiously but with speed, is Stocky Man. He sifts through the crowd, making his way towards the stage. He almost immediately begins speaking into the microphone.
"I had a hard time getting here today. Once again, our radio broadcasts have been stopped. It is getting much more difficult to speak. Anytime anyone speaks about truth or about love in the deeper sense, one is putting one's life on the line. I stopped and thought about how easy it is for these sick, evil people to take away life. And they have taken away so much life without giving anything back. I would get depressed over this. Until I realized that life had to be stronger than a moron's or an egotist's bomb. These people could not create life, so how can they take it away? We are dealing with petty people who kill children and lie about it. Could these people really win? Man who has two green thumbs, he is able to produce billions of tons of food, yet there is starvation among the red paint people. He has all the riches one could imagine. Homes, cars, work-saving inventions, machines that allow him to soar through space. He can speak many languages, in fact every language that exists, except truth. Why does he create bombs that will destroy the world he lives in? We are deluged with a plague that his scientists created in a laboratory just to kill people. Not all people, just the unwanted. Why should man decide who is wanted and who is unwanted? Can you imagine being born into this world and being labeled unwanted at birth? Never mind what you do or say. You can fit this category just by the way you look, or where you come from, or who your parents are. There is nothing crueler. I am only touching the surface of these problems. Man's ship is sinking. It cannot go on like this much longer. It is not about overthrowing governments. It's about overthrowing ourselves from the inside out. His ship is sinking. Get off now. Listen. Be on the watch. Look at the signs. It's time to feel, to give, to forgive. I look at the earth, at all the wonderful things that exist. Mountains that kiss the clouds. Trees that never let us down. Not ever. And believe it or not, there are many, many beautiful people who I believe agree with me. All of these things do not exist in vain. The beauty of one leaf eclipses everything a madman could ever do to negate life. In order to survive, we must forget about the old way of thinking. We cannot win over bullets. We are too fragile. We must know it is not even about winning and losing, living or dying. It is about being, about going inside to the spirit world. We may enter the spirit world through sound, through music, as it manifests itself as sound. The people of death don't believe in anything other than war, hate, and greed. They see nothing, they believe in nothing. Their world is fading. The tone world has no food shortage. No prisoners, no crime, no rent to pay, no ozone layer problems, no hate, greed, or selfishness. The tone world is the real world.
The crowd is speechless. Stocky Man quickly exits the stage as the army closes in towards him. Sarah Greybeard tries to follow Stocky Man, but cannot get past the soldiers who are blocking the area. General Tulip, the officer in charge of the army, arrives in a white car, which parts the crowd as it drives through the square. General Tulip is about 6 feet 6 inches tall. He is wearing a three-piece tweed suit and white sneakers. He carries a huge revolver on his waist belt.
Please go home. This is over. There is no shadow world or tone universe. There is fashion, there is science, there is the stock market, there are drugs, cigarettes, parties, cars, jets, yachts, but there is no, I repeat, no tone world. This is my gun, and this is my bullet. This is real. It is not art, it is purpose. It is against the law to even imagine a world without death. Stocky Man will be caught, arrested, and imprisoned. That is all. This is the end of the fantasy.
The square is cleared as General Tulip re-enters his car. Raspy Voice sits on a bench as the general's car pulls off. The soldiers, including Wordless, search the bushes and grounds for Stocky Man. It is almost 1 p.m. Fate is sobbing in the corner. An old woman sweeps her front yard. She sort of dances as she works, singing a song. There's money to be made. Go and make your money. There's money in this. There's money in that. There's even money in being a rat. She sings every time someone walks by her yard. The old woman waters her grass. There is a thin green fog on the ground. Sarah Graybeard walks down the side street on her way home. The sky goes straight up and down. In a dry patch of yellow grass, Stocky Man sits on a rock resting. Wordless approaches from behind.
Hands up, who are you?
My name is Stocky Man. Why is General Tulip so cold and heartless? A man who has the same name as a flower.
I listened to what you said today. You spoke about forgiving one another. When you say time is running out, are you talking about your time or all time?
I've got to go now.
Stocky Man slips into the thicker bushes. Wordless sits on the rock with his head down. Chapter 3. Intuitive Tomorrow.
One tent of a three-ring circus remains standing. All the horses have run away. The ringmasters were strangled by their own hands. The countryside smells of a battle that has taken place long before. A brown, light-footed charger leads the weary soldiers into the maple forest. They wear dirty gray uniforms, trudging along like sharks. They smell blood. Their faces are masked with red anger. Still, other faces overflow with despair. The trees seem to get stronger. You can almost feel yourself going up to the top of one to kiss God on the forehead. This is the setting outside. Inside, this is a living spirit world, the place where babies live before they are born. It is the place they return to after life. The language spoken here is a cosmic sound language. A word is a sound is a vision. The center of the universe is the periphery. Sometimes for a half a second, we see a blur that contains all the stories. If we look inside while producing sound vibrations, we see the horizon. There are thousands upon thousands of orchestras in the tone world. There's an orchestra of raindrops and one made of snowflakes. There's an orchestra made of all kinds of light. There are tunnels that lead to the color world and the trance world, with continuous sound and continuous silence existing at the same time. There's an orchestra of dolphins and whales. There really are no names, no categories. It is about the one big shape and the trillion little shapes that make up the shapeless, timeless space. The naked eye cannot see the melody or harmony that is present. It constantly speaks about the intuitive tomorrow. There's a huge silver disc in the sky. It is a message from the Father of Sound. It is about vibration. The sky is a burnt blue wall. a curtain of water erupts. To the left of the disk is a fire-red planet. A roped ladder dangles from the moon. Stars fill the galaxy. A bridge of shells hosts 300 prophets riding on goats. They dismount and walk toward the sun. Their footprints turn into clouds. Someone is knocking on the yellow birth door. The doorman, who is both male and female, opens the door. A bluish-purple flame spirals and laces, the embryo still in the womb. Now droplets of stone pour from the opening at the top of the world. The story is in the strong music the thunder drummers produce. I am a whole wheat dumpling, sautéed in blood. The angel says it is time to go. Blue, white flames line the birth passage. I see no color. I feel nothing. Grains of sand turn into ants. Why do I leave my eternity to be with you? A bolt of lightning stretches across the vast darkness. The sun resounds like a huge gong. The wind whistles through the holes in the sky. Trees are strung with sinew. The earth is a soundbox of 6 million birds singing 6 million tones simultaneously. Spirit tones float in lava. Ice castles melt, forming huge lakes. The seas of oceans, water tones begin to sing. The thunder drummers take 2 steps forward and spin. The earth opens up and swallows the sound. Tear tones slide down the bamboo stick. Silver peacocks place their hands on the unwashed altars in the rice fields. Bell tones are sounded. The house of the Creator is the body. The altar is the heart. It is also the Creator's drum. The rhythm is a life force, the vibration of temples, the green mountain, the worm digging in soil. Children collapse in the bushes. They use leaves as pillows. The pillows turn into light, then to eternal happiness, then to stars. Oak and maple harps are plucked. The long breath is held. The tail of the dragon is caught in the lid of the upper lip. Stone fingers flap like skin peeled and placed over gourds. Branches tremble from the corner of the eye. Shadows sparkle in the golden wetness of visual, touchable dream zones. Every lie that has been told since creation is written in huge letters over the black purple horizon. The drone begins. Thick rosin dust over a field of dandelions. Singular tones bounce over low ocean wave. The same song. God is the master of masters, the composer of life and all that elevates. The instrument is all creation. The creator is the improviser and the player, the spirit that causes all things to dance. Human beings create only through the grace of the creator. Sound exists as a force of nature that leads us back to the creator. The intuitive tomorrow does not last. It is not about that. It is about the signs that inform. It is about the senses that do not touch. It is about unearthly realities that science does not understand nor chooses to accept. It is about the death of death and the life of life, the taking away of fear. It is about filling souls with compassion to sweep one's entire being with hope and belief in truth, leaving this vessel when we meditate on peace. Finding the lost children who seek passage on the ship, the ark, the psalm, the last sunset. One day the sun will be late setting. This will be the sign. Please have all pains eased, all hurts soothed, wrapped in love, in the peace of acceptance of salvation. Every sound must be filled with truth and love for all creation. The intuitive tomorrow may last a lifetime. What shall we do when we cannot hear the silence? The intuitive tomorrow will solve the mystery. It is today. It is yesterday. The intuitive tomorrow is another name for the music. It is the life. It is the dance. It is the prancing pony, soon to be stallion. It is the doe we saw that morning on the way to Vermont. It is the shirt off my back onto yours. It is the birthday party, the river mixing with the ocean. The intuitive tomorrow is the kind nurse who gave you that sip of water after your operation. Within the intuitive tomorrow, the deaf hear, the cripple walk, the pain of famine vanishes. There is no war, guns, or missiles. The sky is deeply concerned. It buckles and caves in due to the weight of these elements. It's as if the seat is the volcano. When its crust cools, it will be the new landscape, the playground for the little ones, the point tones split and stretched across time. The nail of the finger of the valley is 1 million times the size of 1 million galaxies.
Chapter 4. The Yellow Bus. Raspy voice seems tired. He and his unit have been searching the forest for 10 days, looking for the entrance to the tone world. He seems to know the search is fruitless and leans back towards a spruce tree. He sees a fox in the bushes. It dashes off. The other soldiers, exhausted, wearily follow the path laid out by Raspy Voice. A yellow bus is parked in the clearing. Raspy Voice speaks softly with his vocal growl.
Everyone back to the bus. We're finished.
He then walks toward the forest.
Wait here. I'll be right back.
Raspy Voice left at about 3 p.m. The bus waited until 10 p.m. for him to return. He didn't show up. There were no signs, not even a footprint. They looked again the next day and again the next. After several weeks, Raspy Voice was labeled missing in action. He was never found. Chapter 5. The Eye is a Window. To the left is a highway. Cars move quickly over this road. A large field of grass is on the right side of the highway. A beautiful farmhouse runs parallel to my left eye. 180 yards in front of this is a flower market where Sarah Graybeard picks out flowers to be freshly cut. 100 yards in back of the farmhouse is the actual farm, which is made up of rows and rows and rows of corn. A small man watches the fields. In back of these fields are white houses with fences around them. To the far, far right are the train tracks. From time to time, a train passes by. Wordless sits on a bench waiting for such a train.
Stocky Man does not broadcast or speak publicly anymore. In fact, he's not been seen or heard from in months. I've just about lost it. Everyday soldiers search the forest and hills for passageways to the Tone World. And every day they find nothing. Raspy Voice always said you can't see anything with your eyes or really hear with ears. Few people understood this concept. I think Raspy Voice and Stocky Man had come to the same conclusion. It is not about the literal. It is about the intuitive. About the way the sky opens up to let the sunlight through. And how these waves of light are lifelines thrown to us each day by God.
Chapter 6. The sky is bright orange at sunrise. Morning. Five soldiers, carrying rifles and backpacks, march through a wheat field. The clouds in back of them are shaped like a face. Noon. The four soldiers sit on a huge rock at the base of a hill. The fifth soldier paces back and forth. A small white dog sniffs the ground looking for food. The soldiers move towards the dog. They surround him and club him with their rifles. The dog lays sunk in the dirt. Evening. The soldiers set up camp at the edge of the ocean. The sand on the beach is green. Morning, second day. A blue pickup truck, driven by a woman wearing a hat with a feather in it, pulls into the campsite. A man dressed as a circus clown sits in the back of the truck with four children. They are watching cartoons on a portable television set. The children are helped off the truck. They are told to stand with their backs to the ocean. Some of the children seem to be distracted by the smell and the sound of the water, as if they had never seen or heard it before. They had been promised a day at the beach. Their faces are filled with joy. The soldiers raise their rifles and fire. The children fall. The woman sits in the truck reading a newspaper. The bodies of the children are put in sacks and tossed into the ocean. The truck pulls off. Morning, the third day. The sky is bright orange at sunrise. The soldiers continue to march. The woman driving the blue pickup truck stops at a fuel station. She gets out and pumps some gas, then gets back inside and drives down the road. Looking into the rearview mirror, she sees the faint image of four children playing with a white dog. Later, she writes in her journal, "I am deeply concerned with the reality of resurrection. These shadow people may indeed exist."